Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Nintendo goes crazy for cardboard, motion capture without cameras, and is your smartphone the best camera? Live from the Twit East Side Studios in the beautiful Pentaluma, it's the new screensavers. Yeah!
There's a lot of people in the studio. Welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 153, recorded April 18th, April 21st, 2018.
Step into the future, maybe.
Yeah, I know. That was April 21st, 2018. We got a room full of Australians, and we're filling in for Leo.
That's right. We are not Leo Laporte.
No,
you're Megan Maroney.
I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Mm-hmm. I think together we might add up to Leo, but then we have no guest.
Certainly, maybe between our height, we might add up to...
Well, I was trying to kind of hold the little crouching position earlier, but that's just weird. So I'm not going to do that. We're just going to have the deal. How you
we
doing?
Are. I'm doing good. Haven't seen you since Thursday.
I know. I feel like it's been forever. And, you know, we have hot topics.
Yes, let's do the hot topics.
Not quite yet, though, because we got to kind of tease forward.
Oh, right.
But I was going to say, we got the hot topics, so that's like a little familiarity mm-hmm. with what we normally do on Thursdays mm-hmm. with Tech News Weekly. But that's not happening yet. We're going to be talking, actually, borrowing producer of this show, one of the producers of this show, Karsten's kids, Zach and Alex, because they've been playing around with the new Nintendo Labo kits. You probably know all about these. Like, I'm just being introduced to these today, and I love them, these little DIY cardboard kits.
Yeah, they just came out. They're really, I'm amazed. And they say Karsten didn't help them at all. Mm-hmm. They would not let him help them, and you're going to be really amazed to see what they see. We are also, Jason took one for the team. We we had a guy with a motion capture suit, and I've already worn a motion capture suit. I've done that
when
we went to 2K Games, and it was lovely and tight, and and I said, Jason, it's your turn. So this is a different kind of motion capture suit. So stick around to see him in that suit. You really enjoyed
great.
It a little too much.
Well, it was fun. I've never had the chance to do that before. Mm-hmm. Although it was a little constricting, but you'll find out here soon why. We've got a call for help, of course. Some smartphone cameras. We're going to kind of dive deep into a question around the Pixel 2 XL and kind of the quality of camera pictures that you get out of that. Rishi Sanyal from DP Review is going to be joining that conversation.
And then we have the mailbag. We have an iPhone and an Android question, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're kind of split evenly between those.
But now let's get to our hot topics. What's
all right.
The first one?
What is the first one? Well, I feel, okay, so I haven't been to San Francisco in at least, probably not in the last 3 or 4 weeks. But within that time, I started hearing all this stuff about electric scooters. Maybe you've heard about this too, how scooters are basically taking over the sidewalks in San Francisco in a similar way from what we heard, you know, not very long ago, a few years ago, with Uber kind of coming in revolutionizing how you get around the city. Now it's pretty standard. Well, electric scooters apparently being left all over the sidewalks through San Francisco. People find them. You know, different companies like Bird, Lime Bike, Spin allow you to basically just hop on one and take it where you need to go and rent it as need be. And the city is not very happy about that.
Well, that's because people were just leaving them around. They were just like, I'm done. Like, I'm just leave it there. Like,
looks
city bikes.
Sloppy.
Yeah, city bikes have also existed. It's what they're calling like the last mile of transportation. Back in my day, that was just walking. But apparently people don't do that so much anymore. They need to, if they're not going to take an Uber, they're going to take a bike that they borrow, or they're going to take a scooter or some other way, your jetpack. I think the thing that Karsten's kids built, I think that's going to be the next thing that will fly on your cardboard.
That's at least 2 years from now, the jetpacks.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, people are just leaving them around, and other people were dropping them. And, you know, it's like, this is the age of the tech lash, which I said I would never use that that phrase, the backlash against tech companies, because I feel like tech lash should more be like an internet-connected fake eyelash company. But that's another story. People are not happy with the tech bros. And this, they're like, no, you can't. You've disrupted enough. We're outlawing it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Board of Supervisors, they're actually considering a bill right now that would grant authority to the city to crack down on this even further, require these companies to have some sort of a license to operate, require people who are using these to be wearing a helmet, you know, basically jump through some hurdles to ensure that there's some sort of regulation, some sort of control over these things. I mean, when you see the pictures of the scooters just kind of hanging out in the grass, it's like, well, I'm done with it. Just falls on the grass and it feels very chaotic, and like I can kind of understand. Mm-hmm. I would get a little irritated about that too, but I haven't experienced it firsthand. I also haven't experienced walking through a city and being like, man, I could really go for a scooter right now. Oh, there's one, and you hop on and you go. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've been doing it like in Berkeley with bikes, you know, just like a bike, you'll just leave the bike and then you'll take it, like that's totally free. And then the city bikes, I mean, in D.C., I don't even know if they have these much in San Francisco, but in D.C. and New York, where I just was, they had them, but they're sponsored by Citibank. So it's like, that's kind of an eyesore, too. It's like this big advertisement with bikes on it. Right. But a lot of people use them. It's super nice to be able to just stick your credit card in and ride, and then you park it in another place. Because so unlike bikes, which you could steal, the scooters, they don't go. I mean, they could scoot, but the electric part of them doesn't go unless you, you know, put your credit card in or whatever. You use the app.
Right, to kind of unlock it. Mm-hmm. And I think they're also considering, you know, to make sure that people are kind of being responsible with where they put these afterwards, considering implementing some sort of a system where the users actually have to, or maybe they have already done this, where you have to actually take a picture of the scooter when you're done using it to show that you've properly put it in its place. Mm-hmm. Who knows where this is all gonna land? You know, these companies have had resistance in other markets as well. Santa Monica just fined Bird $300,000 for failing to get a proper business license in that area. And it just, like you said, it kind of flies in the face of this attitude that we've seen in Silicon Valley and tech in general for a while now, which is just like, hey, you know, move fast, break things. We don't kind of slow down to do these things like get a permit or whatever. We'll ask for forgiveness instead of asking for permission. And we're kind of seeing a pushback against that right now.
Yeah, and I think that people don't like scooters. Like when we rode those Segways for the cold open, like people laughed at us. People screamed at us. and even in Petaluma, just people don't like the idea of people riding on scooters, like electric bikes. It's similar to that kind of phenomenon. Like if, you know, push yourself with your own legs, there's that kind of divide of like, why do you need a scooter?
Or sharing the sidewalk, because, you know, you think of the sidewalk as a place where we walk, not mm-hmm. a place where there are motorized vehicles zipping past you in every direction. So mm-hmm. I can understand.
The next big story this week, Smug Mug bought Flickr. And if you don't know what SmugMug is, SmugMug is similar to Flickr, but it was a paid site. I don't know. I had my pictures up there. I just went and checked. I still have all my pictures on SmugMug. And they just bought Flickr. Flickr, of course, was owned by Yahoo, was bought by Yahoo, which is now Verizon, but called Oath for some reason. Oh, so they have broken the chains of Oath, and now they belong to SmugMug, which is weird because SmugMug is a lot smaller than Flickr. So here's mm-hmm. this giant giant community of photographers on Flickr, and then now SmugMug, which is quite smaller, and was more on, like, you really had to pay to have an account most of the time. They're both for photographers. That's the thing that's in common. People who really like to shoot raw and keep their raw, you know, photos from cameras. I think it's really interesting because when SmugMug started, photography in general, and when Flickr started, was really different than it is now. Like, I mean, you'd ask any photographer who's been around, and they're like, the whole industry has really changed because now everyone is taking pictures, tons of them, and putting them up, and no one really cares as much about the quality of photos as they used to. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
It's kind of like we take the photography aspect of everything that we do online for granted because, like you said, everybody offers it. Mm-hmm. Apparently, SmugMug is an older company than Flickr. SmugMug's been around, slightly older, you know, like maybe a year older or whatever. But their plans right now, from what I was reading, is to not really change things. It's almost like they're saying, we bought Flickr because, well, it's Flickr. We're not really quite sure what we're going to do with it, but we're really not going to rock the boat. We're not going to change very much, and we'll figure it out over time, which mm-hmm. apparently is how SmugMug in general, you know, as a company, has really kind of existed up until now. It hasn't had like a serious, like, you know, spelled out plan from the beginning. It's just been kind of following along for what its users actually wanted and then following that direction. They have the same plan with Flickr.
Yeah. I mean, I used to think of SmugMug more as like where you put your real photography as opposed to Shutterfly, like back in the day, like, you know, then in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was where you really uploaded. If you had more than just, if you put them on Shutterfly, they would reduce the quality. But if you put them on SmugMug, they could, you know, they had all this storage, which was amazing at the time.
Right.
And not so amazing now necessarily. So
now, once again, we take that for granted, mm-hmm. I think, now. Something that, maybe you take this for granted, because on iOS, you've already figured this out. But on us Android users, apparently this is a lesson that's never learned by Google. But Google has plans to, finally get serious about messaging, which, if that sounds familiar, it's because it totally is. I feel like we're here every 1.5 to 2 years where Google decides it's going to fix messaging on Android. But apparently it's something called chat. And what's different, so first of all, the bad news. If you're an Allo user, you know, that thing that they touted 1.5 years ago and said, this is our new big thing, big effort.
I think you're the only Allo user.
We only use it for All About Android because I feel like we have to. It's Google's messaging app and we use it for the show. But apparently they're taking all of the staff from Allo and they're kind of putting that on pause. So if you're a big fan of Allo, sorry to say, there's not going to be a whole lot of development. But they're putting all their efforts into chat, which is not necessarily an app in and of itself. Google already has an app called Android Messages, which is on a ton of Android phones. It's kind of their straight up, you know, SMS app. But it supports something called RCS, which stands for Rich Communication Services. That's more, think of it as more of like instant messaging features, but built into something that the carriers support, something similar to SMS. So it's compatible, you know, with all the SMS functions, but you also get things like read receipts and a little message that says when the other person is typing currently, things like that, those expanded functions that on iMessage, the thing you probably take for granted because you're just so used to it being great, have. And for whatever reason on Android, we don't have that. But this requires Google to strike some really successful, you know, have some really successful conversations with the carriers to get them all on board so they support the same format, the same version of RCS, which I think is kind of the big challenge.
So I did take it for granted until, as you know, every January when we switch phones and I have to muscle through an entire month of using Android. Sorry for me.
Or 6 weeks, because yeah. That's what you said this
yes,
last time,
exactly.
And we had to hold ourselves to it.
And truth be told, I love everything about Android except for the messaging. It was like I got totally, I felt like on an island by myself. All my iPhone friends didn't really even know what to do anymore. I do feel your pain. So But I'm not really sure what they're doing here. So are they basically saying, like, we're not going to make an iMessage clone. We've tried 10 times and it's never worked. So make the carriers do it?
I think what they're saying is we want all of that functionality, but we want it to be built into some sort or have there be greater support for our version of the standard of RCS that hopefully even iPhones would support. Because it's almost like saying SMS is dated, which it kind of is, right? Like or MMS is dated. You send a photo via MMS and it down-reses the photo and what you end up getting. Like those were things that we were okay with prior, but now that feels like a big compromise. So I think what Google is saying is we've tried the app approach. That didn't work out so hot. If we can get everybody supporting this one standard the way that we want it to be supported, which I feel like is a tall order, by the way. But if we can get them to do that, then we've kind of changed the norm of how the carriers deal with this type of messaging. And hey, what do you know? We also have a very powerful messaging platform that's supported on Android via Android Messages, the app.
Well, I mean, I could have used Allo on my iPhone. I downloaded it and everything, and I sent you one message, and I was like,
Wasn't it a great message, though?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But beyond that, beyond just the fact that I don't know that people would necessarily switch, also updates are handled by the carrier with Android, and that hasn't worked out so well, isn't it? That's the thing you're also always complaining about. Like, I don't have my updates. Unless you have a Pixel phone, you're not getting, you have to depend on the carrier to get your security updates, and you're not. So that, since we're saying that worked out so well, let's hand over chat to them as well.
I don't know. I mean, that's a really great question. Like I said, I don't know how I feel about this. I appreciate where Google is coming from, and I really hope they're able to pull it off, and it sounds like they're throwing a lot of resources at it. But I mean, it's a tall order to get a number, and we're not just talking about U.S. carriers. We're talking about, you know, they would want this support to be worldwide. That's a lot of different, you know, individual organizations with their own efforts going on. They might even have their own flavors of RCS that they want to be the standard and not your standard, Google. And so that's going to be a challenge.
Well, I think it's a bigger challenge also because it doesn't support end-to-end encryption.
That's,
it's not on by default, which was the problem with Allo. That's a thing that everybody complained about, and the carriers aren't going to do that. And so that instantly isn't as secure as iMessage. So when I decide to become a Russian spy, I'm not one yet, but I'm not ruling it out, then I'm going to continue using iMessage, and not just for the Animojis, but for the end-to-end encryption.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, end-to-end encryption, that's something that you see in most messaging platforms.
Yeah, Signal,
now.
Telegram,
but that's not
WhatsApp.
Something that you get in SMS. So if you can replace SMS with RCS, even though it also doesn't have end-to-end encryption, the thing you already don't get via SMS, but you get all these other things. And I think that's where Google's coming from. But I agree. I wish that it was end-to-end encrypted. That seems like a big fail to me.
Well, we'll see. I guess it's rolling out now. I mean, by carrier, like, so you'll get it, you know, the same day you get your security updates, which is in Denver.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, different flavors, different support is rolling out, but I don't know if this, we're probably going to hear more about this at Google I.O. next month.
Okay. All right. Is it time to walk over to the news
Let's
desk?
Let's walk.
And we're going to talk to Zach and Alex about the Nintendo Labo.
All right. Let's do it. We'll wander over and take a look at some cardboard projects over here. The Nintendo Switch.
Nice shades, Alex.
Yes. They are made out of cardboard.
All right, so we are surrounded by lots of cardboard crafts, it seems like. But this is actually high technology. Sitting with Zach and Alex. Karsten, one of the producers here at Twit, you are his sons.
Yes.
What is that like?
It's interesting.
That's kind of what I expect.
And we have a dog.
Oh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to leave out the dog. I apologize. So you guys actually had a really cool, I don't know if challenge is the right word, but this is where it's a perk to be Karsten's sons. Yeah. One of many perks, I'm sure, is that you get, like, I'm sure you were a Nintendo Switch fan to begin with, but you got to play around with the Nintendo Labo kits, which, I mean, this is really cool. What are we looking at here? Because you basically built this stuff, right?
Yeah, we're looking at a lot of cardboard, one rubber band, and a few stickers.
Wait, can I press a button?
Oh, it's a piano. So you made this piano, and that's the Switch that's in there. That's the Nintendo Switch that's inside.
So we've got the Nintendo Switch docked into this cardboard piano.
Yep.
And obviously, as you can see, that, like, the idea with Nintendo Labo is that you... what patch is this? What sound is this? Is this old person sound?
Probably.
I'm pretty sure that's what that is. And by the way, you're changing the sound by putting in these, like, little cardboard modules.
Yep.
That reprograms it. How long did this take to build, start to finish?
3 hours, I think.
Whoa.
Just sitting down, yeah.
You
yeah.
by yourself, Zach?
Yes.
No help from your dad?
No.
Or your brother. No. Alex, where were you?
I was playing Minecraft.
Okay, all right, you're forgiven.
That is my big question. Was building this more or less interesting than playing Minecraft? You can honest answer.
Yes.
Building this was more fun than playing Minecraft.
Good.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, and you guys have you put together a few different pieces, not only this, which is, it's really hard to not, you know, want to play around with the piano, but, I mean, we've got all these other things. This right here on the table, this is like a sheet that is obviously unbuilt, and basically this box is just filled with tons of those, right?
Yeah.
About how many, and what's the kind of different things that you can build?
There's this piano, there is a fishing rod, a house with basically a Tamagotchi figure that lives inside of it. There's motorcycle thing.
Yeah, okay.
And basically what is the equivalent of a hex bug.
A hex bug.
Like the things that like vibrate around that look like toothbrushes.
And then you put the Joy-Con inside that, right?
Yep.
Is that how they vibrate?
Yep.
Oh. And then you also, did you make Alex's hair, his wig, out of cardboard?
That is a cardboard wig. No, it's not. But the glasses are cardboard. So, yep. I mean, as you're unpacking this, like, obviously there's a game component to it, right? So you've got a little memory card. Like, does it just come with a ton of different memory cards or one memory card it's that all these things tap into?
One memory, well, each kit comes with a different memory card, about this big. Let's see, this one actually probably has it.
Yeah, that one.
And it's about this big. That's okay. About it.
And you drop that in, and then whatever the cardboard piece that you built, of which there are a lot in there, it's going to automatically recognize what it's connected into, right? You don't have to manually select that and say, well, this is the piano.
You kind of, it's a little half and half. You kind of have to click on the piano setting, but then everything else kicks off from there. Like, it knows that now that it knows it's the piano, it can, like, do piano things.
Right, right.
So these little nodules have stickers on them. Did you have to put those on there?
Yeah.
Oh, and so did you put them on right the first time, or did it take a few times?
I think a few of the stickers I had to, like, peel off and peel on because they weren't exactly on correctly, but most of them the first time.
Now, did you watch videos, or how did you learn how to do this?
All right.
Basically, item has instructions for building.
Yeah, basically, when you first plug in the game into it, it says, oh, well, you can't play with anything since you haven't built anything.
Oh.
So, and then it teaches you how to build everything step-by-step process. You can rewind, go forward faster.
So you aren't necessarily unboxing a manual, because the manual's in here. Part of the process is that it's all kind of start to finish. It's coming from the Nintendo Switch.
Yep.
Okay.
A bunch of cardboard.
Did your dad help you build these?
He didn't help me. He helped Alex a little.
Alex, what did you build with your dad?
A thing.
That thing. Did your dad cry during the making of this?
Yes, very much.
Yes, he did.
Is it time for you to go put that suit on? It's like a backpack.
Yes.
I want to see you wear that. It's like a mech suit backpack of some kind.
Wait, shouldn't I take off the mic because when I get ripped in the walking?
I think, are you plugged in?
Yes, I am plugged in.
Okay.
These kids are smarter than us.
Yes.
In trouble.
We can take that off. Apologies about that. So this is like a mech warrior backpack with, I mean, string. How long did this take?
This morning.
Come to me.
I'm not sure how long.
Oh, okay.
So we should say this just came out yesterday. I mean, you guys just got this, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive.
Got it yesterday.
Well, I'm going to start with this. Alex, can I get you to come on? Start on me, couple, and then I'll come out to him. Okay, go ahead, Alex. Show us how this works.
All right, so Alex is going to put this crazy mech backpack on, and actually, this is a little different, right? For this, it goes into the dock. The Nintendo Switch goes into the dock so that you can kind of see the effects on the TV screen while you're wearing this huge cardboard backpack. Is that right?
Yep.
Zach, I need the red.
I just have to switch the games real fast.
Okay.
So the Joy-Cons go in the side of your mask.
Oh, that's cool.
Is it?
One on the side of his mask.
Does it go the other way?
And
there we go. It's like you're a welder or something.
Masks. Yeah.
A welder mech warrior combo.
Wait, I need to put it on.
Put the shoes on.
it's a top to bottom look, really.
And everything's connected, so you could fight giant robots right now and
not
win.
Not fight giant robots. Be a giant.
Oh, okay. Sorry. There's no fighting.
Can you fight as a giant robot?
Oh, okay. No, you crush humans.
He fights aliens.
Oh, aliens. Okay.
Aliens and humans.
Okay. And then you have the.
I need a thing in my back.
The red Joy-Con. Does it go? It has little instructions. I'll follow the diagram, which makes it pretty straightforward. Okay, and I don't need to do anything once I pop that in there. It automatically figures it out. I think what's interesting about this to me is, I mean, obviously that it's made of cardboard, how they've made this so operational from the perspective of, like, I mean, there's something that recognizes this design on this plug so that when you put it in, it changes things. And, I mean, is that common through all of these, that there's little pieces like that that do that?
I think that is. Basically, the red Joy-Con, which is the right one, comes with a camera, an infrared camera.
Ah, that's so
basically,
cool.
On the other side of this, on the inside, each of these keys has a little sticker to it. And when you press the keys...
It shows the movement. We can show that off. Leave that open because I want to show that off in a second. But right now, we're watching.
So he's
that's
that car.
So cool. Alex is, you basically are a car, essentially.
How did he? Oh, so you just stand up like Transformers?
No more way! Than that was so cool. So okay, so when Alex stood up from the ground, basically his car turned into a walking robot, a destroying robot. Destroying the neighborhood, essentially. And this is gigantic.
Raise one other arm.
It doesn't work with this either.
Now, are you afraid that it's going to break while you're doing this?
Kind of.
Okay.
But has it broken in the 24 hours since you've gotten it?
No.
Okay, so we know it lasts at least 24 hours of fighting aliens and crushing humans.
And you can actually challenge a friend...
I mean,
if
you have two Nintendo Switches and two Nintendo Labos, you can.
Oh, wow.
We should say, though, that they do have replacement parts, which aren't that expensive, too.
Right. Like, you know, when I think about my history with cardboard, it's usually that it doesn't last forever. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point it's going to break down.
Or
especially when you're getting physical with it. Right. You know what I mean? Like, stuff's going to happen.
Or if you wanted to, like, carry a pizza in that backpack, it probably wouldn't be a great idea.
Yeah, don't do that. Okay. Then you end up with a grease, you know, stain, and nobody wants that on their video game accessory. What haven't you put together yet that you're, like, excited to get to?
The fishing rod and the motorbike.
Okay, what happens when you put the fishing rod together? Is it, like, a fishing game?
You can fish for fish. And for virtual fish.
Okay.
And the motorbike, what's that all about?
Basically, you control a mini motorcycle. So cool. And I'm not too familiar with it since I haven't built it yet, but I think it's more or less Mario Kart 8, but you can control it with the motion controls.
Okay, so I imagine that Carson brings home all kinds of toys similar, not exactly like this, but... and then you play with them for a little while. Do you imagine yourself continuing to play with this?
Yeah, for a while. And I remember first watching the trailer for this. And at the end, they show off other things, too. Like, there's a Toy-Con bazooka, too, and a Toy-Con swan, and other things. So I'm going to basically finish all of these, and then when another one comes out, I bet they're going to be probably backwards compatible, so you can combine all of them.
I mean, this is no, like, lightweight box. Like, this is dense. It's filled with tons of sheets of projects, essentially. So I imagine, like, hours upon hours of not only the building aspect, which is fun in its own right, but then playing the games. But that means that the games should be deep enough to be worth all that effort. Have you found that? Like, are the games quality in and of themselves?
I mean... Alex sure is having a fun time being a giant fighting robot.
That's obvious.
And there's a Toy-Con garage as well. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Basically, you can... it's an if-then formula, and you say basically, well, if the screen is touched, then make the left Joy-Con rumble or something like that.
So is there coding involved in that, or is it just...
Yeah, it's basically... Yeah, I'd say there's coding. I mean, you can get... I remember there was one trailer where it showed, if you use Toy-Con Garage, you can make a, like, guitar out of rubber bands and just making sound.
So you could actually cut out the guitar yourself, make your own stuff. So you're not limited to what they
have.
Sort of like Lego. You can make whatever. You can buy a set or you can make whatever.
Start collecting Amazon boxes now.
Okay. Really? And so then from a game, like, design standpoint, is there, like, a game maker in there that allows you to kind of craft that with if-then kind of approach?
Not really, I guess. I haven't gotten through everything.
Yeah.
But I know.
But you can almost see them kind of going in that direction, because they're really about teaching anyone that's using it to kind of understand how to build a peripheral for a gaming system. I feel like we haven't seen that very much, and they're not that expensive. The variety kit, is that this one?
Yep.
I believe this is the variety kit.
Piano.
Yeah, the piano. $69.99 for all of the different projects that you get in here. I'm not really quite sure exactly how many are in here, but it's a lot. There's a lot of sheets in there. But the piano is kind of worth it.
Yeah, piano was the most difficult one.
So it says age 6 the plus. But then 10 plus for the games. Mm.
Yeah. This one's E anyway.
Oh, okay.
So.
Good to know.
Yeah. And then the robot is $79.99. I just want to get that in there.
So do you think it's worth that?
I mean, yeah. I mean,
$10 worth of cardboard. The inside of that is way more than $10.
Yeah. It's basically $10 worth of cardboard and a $60 game.
Plus the Nintendo Switch.
You have to buy that.
Sold separately.
Yeah, you're not going to find the Switch in there in between layers of cardboard, which is too bad because I would totally get one if that were the case.
Okay, so
you have to build the Switch out of cardboard.
Well, that's the next step. That's their next console. I think we figured it out.
So I presume that you have probably some sort of limits at home, like how much screen time. I don't know if you call it screen time at home. Yeah. I call it scream time at home. Like, do you think this is considered, like, do you like the idea that you're making something as opposed to just watching YouTube, which, let's be honest, we'd all spend the day doing if we could.
Yeah. I think, making things is a lot more fun because then you have something, like, physical that you can be like, go to your friends, be like, hey, I built a piano. What did you do over your weekend?
It's true. Who could say that they built a piano? You can.
Yeah,
because you did.
Okay, so we want
to. Very long to do it.
Yeah, we want to prove how long it really takes. So while we're doing the rest of the show, you were going to put together the little RC car, which is
all right.
So you'll find that. We'll put it together, and then by the end of the show, it's supposed to take ten minutes.
Ten minutes, they said.
So we got to do the rest of the show really fast.
Yes, we got to fit everything else in 10 minutes. That's the rule. Cool, Zach and Alex. Right. Thank you so much.
Should I show you the inside of the?
Yes.
What are we missing?
Show us everything.
Inside? Show us the guts.
What are we missing?
I was hoping there was a pizza.
Oh,
in there,
here. You know what? I'm going to bring it to you. This is impressively large. There you go.
All right.
Is there a wild animal inside? Are these the breathing holes?
No, those are the holes that you can calm it down with electrocution.
Oh.
All right.
Technology has not ruined his imagination.
That's true. It's a good thing.
Technology has only sparked it.
Yes, exactly. Words of wisdom.
So what are we looking at here? So
that's not really...
Oh, okay. That's just the face of it. Oh. Okay. So if you had to... Okay. What are we looking at here? We've got the feet. Oh, the different controls. Okay, now, and this is actually really important to point out because we saw it also with the piano. If you look in the inside, you can see the little white controls attached to the keys. And that's what you were talking about as far as the cameras on the controls.
Yeah.
Recognizing these patterns and detecting that motion. And that's actually how the control happens. It locks onto those white slivers of paint or tape or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's how it controls.
Yep, that's how it knows what to do.
That is really cool stuff. Cool. Well, thank you.
The legs are in the sides. Sides are in the legs.
Right. And they... Yeah, there we go. Right on. That is so cool. All right. So how about we're gonna continue things on, and we'll check back in with you, Zach and Alex. Thank you for playing around with this. I'm sure it didn't seem like work, but which is a good thing. That's the beauty of it, right? And we'll check back in with you and see what
all
you
right.
make.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We are now going to walk back over there and answer a call for help.
All right, let's do it. It's call for help time.
Thank you.
Got to walk around all the folks who, by the way, are here from Western Australia, students from Sacred Heart.
Perth.
Thank you, guys, for coming out.
Yeah.
Jeez, awesome. Hey, okay, I'm going to try something because I've always wanted to do this. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
Oi, oi, oi!
Yes! All right, and with that, it's time for Call for Help. Oi. We have Justin in Denver, Colorado on the line. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm good. How about you guys?
We're doing awesome. We're so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us, for taking some time out of your Saturday afternoon. Hopefully we can help you out. Give us a little idea of what your question is.
Sure. So I'm having my first kid in July, and I'm a little bit concerned that I'm going to take photos and then later on want to have prints made and have them blown up, and the quality is just not going to be there. It's going to be blurry. So I'm wondering if it's necessary to have a dedicated SLR camera, or would a mobile phone be sufficient? And if so, which would you recommend?
So that's a really good question. First of all, congratulations.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
Oh, thank you very much.
I felt that I couldn't really answer this question, because when my kids were born, we didn't have cell phone cameras. Back in the day, 15 years ago, all I had was a regular camera. So,
How did you live?
I don't know. I had a regular camera, and I put them up on SmugBug. But you did have a phone camera, not one that's as good as now, like 9 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 2010 was when we had our first daughter. And yeah, I think I had a Motorola Droid at the time, but I think we also had a dedicated digital camera, not a big SLR, DSLR or anything like that, just like a little dedicated digital camera because, well, I mean, the pictures on a Motorola Droid, I don't know if you know, but they are not very good. They're not what you're talking about or hoping for. So don't use that.
So I thought that we would call in an expert, Rishi Sanyal from DP Reviews. We spoke to him about a month ago, and I knew he took these beautiful photos of his daughter, who he took some. And I know he had a regular camera, and he had the Google Pixel 2. Mm-hmm. And so I thought he could come in and tell you all kinds of things, including, like, things you might not have thought about, like, does a giant camera, like, in a baby's face, is it scarier them? Is a phone easier? And, of course, the thing that we always know is, like, the best camera is always the one that you have in your pocket.
Absolutely.
Every moment. But you're talking about, you'd probably use both, but whether it's worth buying one. So thanks for coming on, Rishi, and talking to us.
Sure. Yeah, hi. Good to see you again. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
I know your daughter was sitting there right next to you, eating some fruit on the floor. Not off the floor. On the floor.
Pretty much off the floor.
So you're a photography expert. What do you think? Does he need a standalone camera?
That's $1 million question. This is something that comes up quite commonly just with my friends, but also even on our site, and our readers ask us this question all the time. As you said, the best camera is the one that you have on you, right? And this is just always on me. Whether it's a Google Pixel or a iPhone or a Samsung, the cameras in these devices have just gotten so good that it's amazing what you can do with it. I mean, sometimes the pictures will look better than what you get with dedicated cameras these days. And that's because of the computational approaches that smartphones are taking to overcome the limitations of their tiny sensor, tiny camera. So, you know, having it on you at all times is a huge factor. And it's also, because it's so small and unobtrusive, I'm able to take shots and video without my daughter really, like, freaking out and just, you know, it's just freezing and being like, what are you doing? Actually, these days when I pull the actual camera in front of her, and this is even not that big because mirrorless cameras these days are getting much smaller. This is nice and light. This is a full frame mirrorless ILC or interchangeable lens camera. These days, she used to just kind of freeze in front of it, but these days she just runs away. She just walks away when I point that at her, and less so with this. But that said, one of the things that you're sacrificing here is image quality when you print large or when you look at it at a pixel level. So if you're, you know, looking down the road to print large prints, which you probably will be taking kids, you know, pictures of your kids, there's still a lot of value in having a dedicated camera, whether it's, you know, a camera that you can change the lenses on or a they make these little one-inch type sensor cameras that almost fit in your pocket. They're yay big and that thick. Come with built-in lenses. That also gives you much higher resolution than a phone will give you. And the other thing is kids are always moving, right? They're always running around. And you want to capture some of those candid moments. And particularly, a lot of those moments are going to be indoors in your indoor lighting, and it's very low light. And autofocus matters in those moments, and sensor size does matter. the phones are computationally, you know, trying to make up for that. But if you want to take a look at a couple of the examples that I sent, you know, if you zoom into this, this is taken with an actual full-frame mirrorless camera, 42 megapixels. You know, you'll be able to blow this up down the line easily, no problem. I think it takes a little while to load. But if you're just looking at images at just an image level, if you scroll to some of the other images there, there's one I just took this morning, actually, with a tree behind my daughter. Yeah, right, that one. You know, if you just look at that at an image level, it looks great. It even got the lighting on her hair and everything, and there's more blur behind her than you'll get with a lot of dedicated cameras. And that's all done computationally. But again, if you zoom in all the way, you're going to notice that there's loss of detail. So it's not a straightforward answer. A lot of it depends on how much you're willing to spend, whether or not you're willing to carry one of these around with you all the time. But, you know, nailing those candid moments with really good autofocus and low noise imagery, you're still going to fare better with a dedicated camera, which is not surprising. That's changing. That's changing quickly.
Another consideration, this is a consideration that I've, you know, had to kind of come to terms with over the years, is facing the reality of what I actually intend to do with any of these photos. Like, I've got the camera in my pocket. I use it all the time. It's the camera that I have, so it's the camera that I use most often to take pictures of my kids. And we have a DSLR at home, and we got it specifically like 2 years after we had our first daughter. I got it because I was like, man, it's going to really be nice to have this high quality camera around. We're going to take, you know, this will be for when we want our pictures to be like frameable and all this kind of stuff. And it was like the effort involved, like having to remember to get it when you're going somewhere, just 9 times out of 10. Like, I just kind of realized at the end of the day, like, well, really, I just have them in a photo roll anyways. And maybe that's I'm sure there are, you know, everybody has a different intention for what they're doing with their photos. But for me, I realized it wasn't worth the effort. You know, ultimately, I'm just happy to have the pictures and they look fine to me. But other people, they want to make them big and put them on the wall. And I get that, too.
Well, you raise a very good point. That's just the energy barrier, especially when you become a parent. You know, time constraints are insane. And one of the real advantages of these things is that all your photos get put up into the cloud, and there's a digital assistant that'll organize them for you, find faces for you. You know, it's so easy. I can just say, send photos of my daughter to my entire family as soon as it's taken. I don't have to lift a finger, and it'll just do that. And they're also making even printing easier because they'll, you know, the assistant, Google Assistant here, will suggest, like, hey, here's an album. Do you want me to print it in a photo book? And so you might actually get more products out of having a device that automatically uses an assistant because you're just time-starved. So, you know, with a dedicated camera, you might not even get around to printing because, again, it's a time constraint. That's an important consideration. I still do usually just because this itself is not that big. I usually still take this with me when I'm just going outside. And the way I get around the whole assistant thing is most of the mirrorless cameras these days, a lot of the DSLRs too now, you can set them up to automatically transfer the JPEG images to your cloud service, like right through your phone, which means they get integrated into the assistant service and cloud. And so really I would think of it as like, I like having both of these on me. I end up taking more photos with this one and videos as well, but you know, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You know, you can use one or the other depending on the situation and merge your photos together in the cloud.
So right now, Justin, you have a Galaxy Note 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking, do I spend the money to upgrade to the Pixel 2 or to get a DSLR?
Yeah, or like a DSLR with a mid-range the mid-range camera, phone camera.
So do you use Google Photos? Is that something that you regularly use now?
Yep, I do. So everything gets backed up there. So I do like that. I was wondering if you said we're talking about the computational. So it's kind of like the phone and the computation on the back end. So are there like pairs that you know, the Pixel 2, S9, is there anything that you would recommend outside of those two?
You know, for kid and toddler photography, the dual pixel autofocus on the Samsung and the Google phones are amazing at just nailing focus even as she's moving. There's some constraints with that. Like, it's these things end up prioritizing the center, especially the Google Pixel 2, a little more than faces. I think the Samsung's a little, quite good at recognizing faces. The iPhone, you're probably an Android, so I don't know if you're going to want to switch to iPhone, but we found the iPhone autofocus in general to fall behind the dual pixel autofocus of Samsung and the Pixel 2. Mm-hmm. So if you're taking pictures of your kid, I would definitely recommend one of the dual pixel autofocus cameras like the Pixel 2. We found the portrait mode, which is the background blurring, to be much better on the Pixel 2, even compared to some of the latest Huawei's and Samsung's. The iPhones do a pretty good job, but you know, look at the background blur of that. It's just, it's hard to tell. And there's some other photos in there that, you know, you don't have to think of the phone as being a one lens camera either, because there are lens attachments you can attach to it and get different focal lengths, get zoom, get wide angle, and autofocus works with those as well. The only trouble you're going to run into is in low light indoors, where the image quality is not going to be as good as you might get from a dedicated camera.
How many of your daughter's photos have you printed, Rishi?
Ooh, you got me.
Zero?
No, that's not true. Holiday cards and some other framed prints we sent to our family, definitely.
And so did you use the DSLR prints, or did you from the Pixel 2?
Those are from a mirrorless ILC. Yeah.
So you haven't really printed anything from the Pixel 2?
You know what? I haven't yet.
Have you?
I do intend to.
Let me think here. I mean, really, any of the pictures that we get printed and hang up on our wall are usually from like actual like photo sessions. Like, mm-hmm. All right, it's our spring photo session. Yeah. So a professional photographer is going out with an amazing camera and taking those pictures
and a bunch of balloons.
There have been a couple. I have gotten a few framed from the first generation Pixel, not the Pixel 2 that I have right now. But you know, like I said, it's just not part of my habit, my routine. So it's not as high importance. I will say, through using the Pixel 2 XL and the computational stuff that it does with the auto blur or the background blurring is a great effect like 90% of the time. But there's the 10% of the time where it's just like, you know, shining through the piece of hair to the background. It's perfectly sharp, that background there, versus totally blurry all around. And weird little things like that can happen. So just to keep an eye out for that. But it's not doing
well, the two other things I would keep in mind, though, are just, you know, do you want to get into and learn photography and camera, or do you just want to hit a single button? Because the phones, you just press a single button, and it just auto-exposes and auto-focuses and everything. And obviously budget. We actually have a parents' buying guide on our site. If you go to dpreview.com and just search for parents' buying guide, we have a couple of dedicated cameras that we recommend that are under $1,000 that'll do the job really well. But I think the biggest question comes down to, if you really want to take the time to learn and grow into a system and always take that separate camera with you, there you go. Or do you just want to click one button and just get it all taken care of for you?
Yeah.
I do know, Justin, that if you can answer this question correctly, everything else in parenting will be easy. This is probably the hardest thing you'll have to deal with your whole...
All right, sure.
Speaking of a mother of teenagers,
everything else is a walk of the park. This is the only challenge that you'll ever face as a parent. Basically.
I'm catching a little flack for that. She's like, this is the one thing you're worried about. And I was like, I got everything else.
But you know what? That may be the case, but down the line, you do really appreciate having great photos. You know what I mean? Whether you plan to frame them or not, I mean, you hear it all the time, and you will say it at some point down the line, but time moves fast when you have a kid, and you blink, and suddenly they're way older, and you wish you had more captured of them being young, because that's in the past now, you know? So it is an important consideration, absolutely.
Yeah. I kind of want to just future-proof a little bit. I don't have any expectations of print, but if, you know, the grandparents, you know, aunts, uncles, things like that, they're going to want them. So I just want to not look back and go, darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in that guide, our top recommendation is actually a very small, it's called an ARX 105. It is expensive. It's $950. Yeah, the ARX 105 right there. But it'll fit in your pocket, so it's not much of a burden to carry with you. It has eye detection, autofocus. It'll find your kid's eye and focus on it, even at 24 frames per second. It'll shoot gorgeous 4K video, so you'll always have high-quality video there that you can edit 20 years down the line once your kid's in college. But you'll at least have all that with you, and that quality is going to it's going to far surpass most smartphones, with the exception of the computational blur, where sometimes if the smartphone pulls it off right, the Pixel 2 might actually surprise you and make something look like you shot it with a full-frame professional-level ILC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks for the question, and thanks for the answer. What are we doing here? Why are we
complicated.
It is. Rishi, we really appreciate your help on this. DPReview.com, Rishi Sanyal, and you can find the write-up that he's talking about there. Thank you, Rishi. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, congrats, thanks, Justin. Did we hopefully give you some, or did we just make it a more difficult challenge to figure out? I'm not even quite sure.
No, I think I've got a lot on my plate coming up. So, like you were saying, the learning all the, you know, how to use the camera and everything. I think the smartphone is going to be the way to go.
Yeah.
So, and then add the camera in if I have free time.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, best of luck and congratulations.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Take care, guys. All right. Have a good afternoon. Next week, by the way, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be standing here. I don't know if I'll be on this side or that side, but I'm going to be here with Rich DeMuro once again on this show. If you want us to answer your tech question, you can do that. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Motion capture is big these days, whether games, movies, even for research. Jason got to put on a little mocap suit, and I got to make fun of him, so let's take a look. 3D motion tracking is very popular. It's used in video games. You've seen it in movies. It's even used for research. But unless you have a giant studio with a lot of different devices everywhere, it can be difficult. But a company called Xsens makes it a lot easier. They have a suit that Jason has been willing to wear.
This is my normal dress for the day.
And we're talking to Christopher Adamson, who is the senior product specialist at Xsens. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Tell us about what makes this suit so special.
Why do I feel so constricted?
Yeah, so Xsens, as a company, we kind of actually have three segments. We have a segment making single sensors for industrial applications, for like drone stabilization, things like that. We have a segment for movement science, for sports rehabilitation, prosthetic research, the things you were just mentioning. And then 3D character animation is what I specialize in. We have two sets of hardware. Jason, you're wearing the Owinda system right now, which is a fully wireless 17 trackers that go to a single USB hub. And then we have a full Lycra suit version. But both are great systems. This one's typically used for starting off animators, schools, because of the ease to get in and out of this system. Everything for the hardware then comes into our software, MVN Animate, where we calculate it on a humanoid structure and give data for games and films and everything.
I feel like with motion capture, I'm used to seeing like the big, I mean, this is a little bit of a suit, but it's not the full body suit that I'm used to seeing. I mean, is this at its core what makes this system different, or do you also offer that, and why would you choose one versus the other?
Yeah, what makes this system different is it is inertial-based motion capture, so it's actually relying on an IMU sensor, which is a gyroscope tracking rotation, a magnetometer tracking magnetic north, and accelerometer tracking gravitational pull. What that means is you don't need optical. You don't need a bunch of cameras for a stage. It's your body moving sensors, then getting calculated into our software. So it's zero occlusion, 100% of the body movement, go anywhere mocap.
We went to visit 2K Games a little while ago, and they had, we were in, you know, we were doing NBA 2K. They had a giant gym and so much stuff. I mean, how is that different? How can you do all that without all that giant, all the million cameras everywhere?
Yeah, so it's two different technologies, and they both have their pluses and minuses. So for an optical system, it's three cameras that triangulate a point. So how that works is off of translation. It's going to give you perfect translational accuracy. How an inertial system works is it's completely off rotation. So you get body measurements to get the proper global position. It's just, there's two ways to skin that cat, and both systems play a role in where they need to go in the motion capture world.
So you said that this has been used in like every Marvel movie, and so this same system or the bodysuit they usually use?
Well, yeah, I mean, most major films and games company own systems like this. They'll use both. Actually, a lot of game studios do prefer the Awinda system because they'll have a lot of animators going in the suit. So typically a Lycra, a full Lycra-like wetsuit isn't going to be something that a lot of animators want to get in, especially if you have one that doesn't like to shower or anything like that. Kind of stinky and weird. So they go with the Awinda. But then a lot of big, you know, big stages that you're kind of used to will go with the Lycra suit. So they'll actually wear the Link system, is what we call it, and get that fidelity of motion capture they're used to.
So the same system is used for video games and movies and prosthetic research?
It's the same hardware. There's the Awinda and the Link. But then, so for the movement science and sports and everything like that, it feeds into a different software that is kind of more open with the algorithms it can give you. For the animation software, it's you record and export. You can do things like time code. You can live stream into other programs so you can see it, your character directly on a 3D character, like Unity, Motion Builder, Maya, Unreal, all sorts of things.
I don't know what to do. I feel like I need to keep moving. Like, if I'm staying still, then I'm doing the technology a disservice.
As a product specialist, it's always like, you could tell somebody's first time in a mocap suit, so it's immediate dance move.
You kind of can't help it. I mean, it does the worm pretty effectively. That's pretty impressive.
So he seems to really like this suit. His birthday's in September. How much do I have to save in order to buy him one just like this by then?
Yeah, so, well, typically, if you're a studio, the package ranges for software and hardware. We have different license schemes, things like that. So the package could be from $12,000 to $34,000, but we actually just released an indie program, which what that is you'll buy just the hardware, you own the hardware, and then you'll actually have 1 year of pro software, so our highest tier is software, for free. So if you're an indie program, you can check out that indie specs, what that means, and then that would be $7,500 for this Awinda system or $12,200 for the full Link setup.
And how far does it go? Like, how far could he get before we would lose?
Yeah, so that's with the Awinda system, it has a range of 150 feet from the USB hub here.
So I could go for like a little walk down the hallway and it would probably continue to capture?
It'd be fine.
Okay.
And then we have...
Bye.
We have a USB stick, so people actually take a Surface tablet, put the USB stick in it, and then put it in a backpack. Then your range is limitless. Then the Link system actually has on-body recording, so the full Lycra suit can actually record for up to 12 hours on a little built-in SD card, so you don't even need a computer. That's when people are doing skiing and skydiving and things like that. We actually developed that technology for movement science for, like, century race or something like that, or running a marathon to actually see, you know, the fatigue in athletes. But we're seeing it used a lot in the animation field for when people are like doing car chase scenes or something like that and need to motion capture their movements, then people are using on-body recording.
So prosthetic research and fatigue for marathoners, what are some of the other research applications for this?
For the movement science, a lot of ergonomics. So if you're in a factory and you need to see how people are moving constantly, that's a pretty typical application. A lot of sports sciences. It's endless. I'm the 3D character animation guy, so I know roughly what they do, but mostly my customers are the film and game people.
Obviously, the system is based around a humanoid character, but you can also track other objects that link into the person that's being tracked, right? Like, how precision-based is that tracking, like, on an object that a human is actually interacting with?
Both systems can support up to 4 additional trackers.
Okay.
So it's based, so your movement of your body is based off your measurements, right? So the prop itself is based off of the movement of a segment of your body. So you're going to put the prop on your hand. It's going to be like good for a sword or like a sheath or wings or a tail, or people even put it on their jaw to get a jaw movement, things like that. So that's going to track 100% of the data. What our prop trackers don't work for so much is like basketballs or something that's going to leave your hand, because we still need that translation from our body segment.
You want to pretend you have a sword, don't you, Jason?
I would love that.
So we had to recalibrate. Jason now has his sword, the sword he's always wanted.
Isn't this a beautiful sword? Yeah, so we got a sensor right there. And all, you know, I was actually really surprised when you were putting this on. I just kind of figured there would need to be two, one out at the end and one at the base. But really, this one sword seems to capture the movement entirely.
Yeah, it's going to capture the whole rotation from the segment of your body on.
So. Right. That's really cool. So obviously in a scene, if this was a scene that I was recording in Hollywood, I'm available, you would want more than just one person in a sword fight. So how many of these systems could you have running concurrently to capture all of that data and take it into a sword?
So our software, MVN Animate, can support up to 4 characters at a time. We do have people that will use like 3 computers, each running 4, so 8 and 12 kind of setups. And that is the big benefit of our system, because there's no markers, you don't get any occlusion. So if you were to go like hug somebody or roll on the ground, you're going to get 100% of the body movement.
So you can add clothes or like a costume or uniform or anything to that?
In our software, it's this biomechanical model, and it's actually very researched biomechanical model. It was a few PhD projects, and so that biomechanical model you see is what we project. But like I said, our software can live stream into Unity and Motion Builder and Maya and Unreal. So we can just go directly onto a 3D character. I can show you it. What is typical for this is if a talent wants to see how they actually look on a 3D character and how to act, then they can see this reference. People will also use it as a recording feature. So if you're just doing previs and need to get a lot of movement really fast, you can just put the suit on and record directly into Maya or Motion Builder, and it'll directly record onto that 3D character. So for some really fast motion capture.
We were also talking a little bit about HD reprocessing.
Yeah.
To kind of clean things up. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we had this new software release in about November, but it was one of the most significant releases we've had for XSens. It's actually an engine, so how we're taking the sensor data and processing it within our software that we've been working on for almost 10 years now. So we're taking all this sensor data, and the new engine actually has magnetic immunity, so you don't get any sort of segment drift, which is revolutionary for inertial motion capture. But we also added HD reprocessing, and what that does is it takes a recorded file, and then it will do a sort of render process that actually gets rid of the foot shaking and any other jitters that you might typically see in motion capture data. A typical high dynamic motion of a file, you might see some sort of shake. So if you see, the sternum will shake right there, and then his foot kind of twists when he lands.
Yeah.
So that's actually the tracker's jumping around on his body, so the reprocess is going to solve that. So then if I actually go to what that file is after the HD reprocess, you're going to get something more like this. So no shake in the sternum, and the foot lands perfectly nice.
Yeah.
So you can imagine this is a huge leap, because in animation, an animator receives mocap data, and a lot of times what they do is they're just fixing like little foot jitters and kind of like shakes of the sternum or something like that. If you don't have to do that, then you get 100 times more motion capture data, more movements, better quality.
More efficiency.
Happier people.
Yeah, more efficiency on the back end, because they don't have to remove all that stuff.
Yes.
Okay, so anyone who's watching this who says you have the coolest job ever, what would you recommend? Would you recommend people learn Maya, Unity, all of it? What would you recommend people?
As far as motion capture goes, Motion Builder is the big mocap tool. That's for where most people do the cleaning and then putting the actual data on 3D characters. But we're seeing a lot of Unreal and Unity, the game engines, really just blowing up, because they're almost making cinema quality renders in real time. So that real time kind of application is what's getting huge in the motion capture world right now, for sure.
And now the systems are capable enough to keep up with it.
Yeah, real time, when you can just jump in a suit and then shoot your movie as whatever, an alien or something. Then
and not be locked into a studio either, which is a really big benefit of this system. You know, you guys have a demonstration video on your site of a woman dancing surround, you know, out in a kind of a loading dock.
Yeah.
You know, and like the world becomes your studio at that point.
Yes, totally go anywhere. If you need a jungle gym because you need a monkey bar scene, go do that. Or if you need a forest, go to a forest.
It's great.
Go anywhere mocap, really.
Well, Chris Adamson, you are the senior product specialist. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you. No problem.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool. Can you dance us out of here?
Okay, sure. I can do that. Oh, yeah. How about a kick? Kick. I'm going to kick you, Anthony.
You had too much fun doing that.
A little bit. It was fun, actually. It felt very official, although I wish, like, in the end, I would end up with, like, a 3D model that I could do something with, mm-hmm. but I guess the recorded video is kind of that.
Somebody in the chat room asked if you took off the thing on your head, that would it look like your head flew off, which we should try that.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't know the answer. I don't know if it would look like my head flew off. I think it would probably just throw off the tracking a little bit, mm-hmm. I'm guessing, because when we actually put the sensor on the sword, and then I put the sword down on a table, it wasn't like the sword in the rendered version was suddenly away from my body. It was still attached to my hand. Mm-hmm. So I imagine it would probably be the same for the head. The head would be attached to the body of the digital person and would just be like constantly looking up or mm-hmm. something like that. Something strange like that.
Too bad.
Yeah. We should check in on this, right?
Oh, yes.
Because
Zach finished it off.
We had a little bit of a challenge here, and Zach and Alex came through completely. As you can see, apparently this is a vehicle, which when used with the controller, you can actually get it to turn. Basically, you can adjust the frequency of how it vibrates.
So that's the Joy-Cons just vibrating. That's it.
That's
cardboard,
all?
Cardboard, the Joy-Cons, and the controller. They call it the RC car. Yeah, he was finished with this a while ago.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it took very long. You're not going to sneak up on anyone with this thing by any stretch.
But you could,
it's
like,
a little
put,
noisy.
You could put, like, a drink on there and then just, like...
Your drink, sir, in 20 minutes. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, if you needed to... Yeah.
Shaken, not stirred, exactly. Or spilled all over the place because it's carpeted floors. Yeah. So, anyways, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's how easy it is and to put that together. And now I'm going to see if I can walk away with this Switch today so that it's mine. It's time for the mailbag! Thank you. Wow, I feel so honored that I get to be the one to open.
Why didn't we put the mail on the RC car? That would have been good and have it.
Yeah, it's true because there's no Dinty Moore beef stew in here.
Too bad.
You want to? Oh, here.
Yeah,
I'll do this.
I'll choose this one, and wait, I want that one.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
All right, you go first.
I'll go first. This is from Girish, who says, my family is constantly taking photos and videos of my six-month-old son, Ari, primarily on our iPhones, which get backed up to their iCloud storage. I'd like a way to back up the original versions from their devices to a central location. My idea was to log into each person's iCloud account and download their photos and videos of him and upload them all to a Dropbox folder. But I'm sure there must be a better way to do it than hacking into my family's iCloud accounts. He didn't say that. He's going to get their permission. There is a better way, iCloud photo sharing, which is so great. I just went on a vacation with my cousin and my daughter and my sister, and we did this. Like, everybody takes their photos, and then you just share them to iCloud sharing, and then they're there in one folder, and then you can back them up either on your own iCloud or on Dropbox or whatever. So can you see, Alex, can you see my mirroring? I think I am, right?
Nope.
Let's see. Mm. Living room. Okay. Can you see me now?
Mirror,
there we go.
Mirror. There we go.
Okay, so I have all these photos that I just took. Let's go to photos. And I took all these pictures of Alex and Zach. And let's say I want to share them. So I select that one, and then I just hit the share sheet. Can you see the share sheet down there? You go, why can't you see that? Oh, okay, there's the share sheet. And then you just scroll over to iCloud photo sharing. And I've created this shared album, The Children Are Our Future. And I can say, treat them well. And then I've already shared this. I shared this with you, Jerry, so you're going to get all these pictures. I can't share with Karsten because he has an Android phone, but you said that all of your family was taking pictures with their iPhones and loading them on iCloud storage. So then I post it, and it's there. So you can see if you just go to shared, like, for example, here's my album of my photos that I took from my trip to Brooklyn. So they're not only just my photos, they're all my sister's photos and my cousin's photos, and then you can back those up any way that you want. So
Very nice.
That is, and so if you look at my phone, Jerry just joined the Children Are Our Future. Can you see there? Well, on my phone, I got a notification. So if someone, you're going to have to tell, if your family has never used iCloud photo sharing, you'll have to tell them. They won't get a notification in text or anything. They'll get it in their Photos app. So they'll have to open their Photos app and it'll right. have that little red one. And then it'll say, oh, like someone invited me to join their album. But you can't join the album either because you're on Android phone.
I can't do it in that app, but Google Photos has this functionality as well.
Oh,
so it has the shared photo functionality. And again, same deal. It's you find that within the Photos app.
So
it's pretty straightforward.
And there is a limit. I think it's like 3,000 or 5,000 photos.
Only 5,000 photos.
But they said they're taking a lot. I mean, you take a lot of photos of babies.
So. Yeah, that's true. It's true. I used to be really good at managing our shared photo album of our kids. Like every week, it was part of my routine. Oh, man, I've so fallen out of the habit of that. It became a job, basically.
Yeah. So,
what is going on there?
That's a really close-up picture of me. That was a selfie I took with the children who are our future.
They are our future.
Treat them well.
As evidenced
Let them
by
lead the way.
Their ability to build things. Evan wrote in to say, hi, Jason and Megan. I've been having some strange issues with my Note 8's camera and other software hiccups and would like to do a factory reset to see if that helps. I'm currently using Action Launcher and I wanted to know how to back up everything, basically a mirror image. Or is that a bad idea because the issues that caused the problems in the first place would still be there? There is a backup option on the Note 8 in settings that you'll find. Usually on Android phones, you can find a backup option in there. It's going to allow for the restore of apps, data, contacts, and photos. So it's not a bit-for-bit backup. It's not the way we think of backup on a desktop where you're like, I'm going to back up this drive and here's a disk image, which is, you know, I can reflash later and it's back to its original state. This is take all the important pieces of information that you have stored on your Note 8, back it up to an external source. You can do that to an SD card or other places. And then you would factory reset your phone and then restore those elements in. So that might actually fix the problem of the weird kind of hiccups that you're experiencing because the factory reset would bring you back to the way you probably started with the phone. And then you could bring that stuff in. And I think that might be good enough for what you're talking about. If you wanted to do an actual disk image backup bit by bit, I mean, I don't really know what solution you have other than what I've done in the past, which is root my phone, get root access on my phone. The problem with that in this particular situation is that when you do that, you have to wipe the phone to start with root. And so that would only help you now if you had rooted your phone before you loaded it with everything that you have on it now. At this point, if you rooted, it would wipe it completely and it would be protected for the next time. You could do a full disk image backup of it that way. So that's obviously not going to help you out. So I think you kind of just have to stick to the system backup that you'll find in the system settings. And then Evan had another question. I'll throw this out here real quick. He says, a follow-up question. If you have time, I recently switched from iPhone and it had the ability to highlight any text and have it read out loud with options for accents and speed. Anything like that for Android that would work across all apps? And yes, so if you're on the Note 8, then you have Android O, you have Oreo, and there is a new TalkBack feature. TalkBack is kind of like the system the system setting for text to voice. There's a TalkBack feature called Select to Speak, and when you enable that, we didn't set up a camera, but I'll show you at the bottom of my screen if it's at all possible. Down at the very, very bottom is a little accessibility human person down there. If I tap that, I get this little over the top of the screen pull out. And what that allows me to do is then to go up here to this wonderful tweet of my dog and select it.
Jason Howell, my dog every time I get out of my chair and walk around the house at this time of day.
Okay, all right. I don't need to play the rest. If you really want to know the end of that story, you can check out my Twitter feed. But and so basically it allows you to do just that. You select the portion of the screen that you want read out loud, and it'll do that with those controls down at the bottom that you can pause it. You can also go into settings and change how it sounds, put a different voice in there, slow down the speed, all that kind of stuff. It's called Select to Speak, and it does exactly what you need. Putting out fires in this place.
Yeah, that's good. You know, people always talk about how iPhones are so much better at accessibility than Android phones are, but I think maybe just the settings are often hidden.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. People do, and I don't know if there's more. There's been more work focused on that. Apple has made it to a certain degree, they've made it a priority, and they've made it a public priority to say that yes, our platform is very good for those accessibility features. I feel like Android for a long time has been playing catch up. But, you know, then again, really, when it comes down to it, you have to ask someone who actually uses those features, because they have to, whether it's good enough. I would say that Android's a lot better now than it used to be. I don't know if it checks all the boxes, though, for someone who really relies on that technology. You know.
Well, if you do, let us know. Email us. You can just email me, Megan@twit.tv. Because we like to hear. It's hard for us to review accessibility features because we don't really use them in a pinch.
Right.
So if you do, we always want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Megan@twit.tv.
Awesome. I think we did it.
We did it. Well, we have some little work. We gotta tell people about the newsletter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Subscribe to it. Twit has a newsletter. Jerry works very hard on it. He works all night.
He's like, I don't know how to work hard.
Twit.tv/newsletter. Then you get all the important stuff in your email box. News, announcements, what's
clips
coming
from
up.
The show, the promo, all sorts of stuff. You can also subscribe to this show by going to twit.tv/NSS. That's where you're going to find all of your podcast links, audio, video, everything that you need to find for this show is at twit.tv/NSS.
And if you don't want to email me, Megan@twit.tv, if you don't want to engage with me at all, you can email newscreensavers@twit.tv, because then you'll engage with Jerry. And he's not as nice as me, so just be aware.
And apparently he's not working hard on the newsletter, so he needs something to do. what else? YouTube.com/thenewscreensavers if you want to find us on YouTube. Makes it really easy to do so there. Once again, big thanks to Zach, to Alex for showing us this awesome Nintendo stuff. Big thanks to Sacred Heart and the students who are here watching the show here in studio, applying a little bit of extra pressure, because boy, it's a little intimidating doing this show with this big of an audience, but we did it. I think that's about it.
Should we high five?
Is that what we do here?
We have.
Okay, we're gonna high five. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the New Screensavers. We'll see you next week.
Bye.